Guten Tag und willkommen. It's episode 81 of Bucks UK TV. It's Victory Tuesday over here in Europe, although Rondé's not quite sure whether the UK's in Europe or not. Tim, Gary and Adam, I think we've started to get our voices back. Adam's still probably got a hangover. Was that not the best trip you've ever been on?
It was unbelievable.
Superb.
Adam, we'll go in. We'll run through our memories of the game, and I'm assuming you've got the fewest memories. So, we'll talk about the game, but like, Munich as a whole, first of all.
Oh, Munich, just as a place, what an amazing place. Talk about NFL fans. I've never seen as many NFL fans in different jerseys as over there. It was absolutely fantastic. But if you're talking about memory, bear with me a bit. I got a little, my throat's a little scratchy. Memories of a game. I think number one.
No, we won't do the game. Just everything but the game.
Oh, everything but the game.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
We'll talk about the game.
How on earth do you start with everything but the game in just this condensed time? It was just fantastic meeting everyone. What I love is seeing the names on the forum, and then meeting them in real life, and then you kind of get a better understanding of that person, and you build up those relationships and those friendships. It is just fantastic. There's nothing
it's
better
true.
Than just meeting the group of friends.
And shout out to Phil and David, not on the podcast tonight, but the logistical effort of what ended up being, you know, over 100 Bucks UK members at the game, more travelling over to join into the parties. Tim, what would you say, apart from the game, what were your abiding memories of Munich?
A great city, absolutely mad. The beer was superb, and it was great. We talked about Bucks UK fans, but we met some great Bucks Germans fans, some I hadn't seen for a couple of years since London. It was just great to get together with everybody and just celebrate an NFL game in Germany, and it was an epic weekend.
It's true. There were Bucks fans. So Carsten, Tobias, Bucks Germany, you guys are amazing. You were the best hosts. I can't remember the Bucks Mexico guy, Adam, who was absolutely fantastic. What was his name?
Which guy? The Mexican guy.
Yes.
I forget his name, but he was right.
He was just he was everyone's best friend.
Yeah, he was such a nice guy.
He was so good. There was Bucks France, dressed up in the pirate outfits.
Trickster.
It was, I mean, yeah, it did so well. Gary, Munich, what was your abiding memory?
Well, I think, to be honest, being a bit more practical about it, the overwhelming thought I had about Munich was how much money did that game generate for the city, for the NFL, for Bayern Munich, whoever it was that was benefiting the hotels. I don't think you can calculate how many millions of euros was generated by that game. I loved seeing all the different shirts. Tim and I were talking on the walk to the stadium. Which shirts have you not seen? And I think the only one we came up with was Detroit. And not a minute later, somebody passed us wearing a Detroit shirt. So it was just epic. I mean, where do you start? Adam summed it up.
I do think the population of Munich must have thought Disneyland had landed for the weekend.
Yeah.
There were some bewildered Muncheners that were wondering what was going on. But you're right. And although having said that, compared to the London games, it really is the united colours of the NFL. I would say there were more Seahawks and Buccaneers fans combined than there probably are at the equivalent London games. Would you agree with that, Gary?
I would. I think there was an awful lot of Seahawks fans. Apparently, they're very big over there. I know not why. There was certainly an awful lot of Bucks fans. I mean, heck, half of them came out on the plane that we were on, and there was quite a few on the plane I was on going back. There was a huge majority, I would say, of the fans in the ground were supporting either the Seahawks or the Bucks. But every other team was represented as well.
It's really hard for me to like pick. I got to try and break down the memories into different days because like there's like 15 memories from the first day, there's 20 memories from the second day. It's really hard to like break that down. Just so many good memories, so many good things.
I mean,
happening.
For me, it was quite an emotional memory. So we were lucky enough to be in a Q&A that Casey Phillips hosted with Rondé Barber and Mike Allstott. And there was one moment where Mike was asked a question about, you know, his playing days and how he enjoyed it and what the fans meant to him. And he paused for what felt like an eternity. And Adam, you and I, we thought he'd forgotten the question, but he was holding back tears. He said how, you know, I played for the fans. And I think, you know, there was a lot of people in the room going, no, you're crying. No, I'm just, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's a fly in my eye.
Just the humbleness and the accessibility of the players. You know, in the Hofbrau House, which if you haven't been to it, it's the craziest pub in the world. You have to go there. You know, we're just sitting there in one side, and then, you know, Rick Stroud, Greg Allman, and Scott Smith decide to sit down and just talk about, you know, Bucks reporting. Crazy times.
That thing with Michael Stott and Rondé Barber, you could tell how much he really meant what he was saying. It wasn't like, you know, he forgot his words and he was trying to quit with something. He meant every single word of that. Holding back the tears, telling us how important the fans are to him. And the reason he loves playing football was all about the fans. And, you know, you could only go to watch one All-Star game and you believe every single word he was saying. But what a guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were there signing jerseys, signing photos, taking photos, everything. Really just meeting and greeting. It was really good. Right, so Tim, the game itself.
Kieran, I got to say, Munich did the NFL proud.
Yeah, they did.
They really did.
You know, next year we're going to be in Frankfurt, so it's interesting. You know, two cat towns in one country. I think the challenge has been set for Frankfurt.
Yes.
Yeah, they've set the bar really high.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I just say one more massive memory for me? And you're not going to like this, Kieran, but you getting that ball from Brian Ford was. I was holding back the tears getting that because you deserve that more than anyone ever. That was just, for me, on that night when you had that ball, it was like this just had to happen on this night with everyone there. It was fantastic. I think we'll give you a round of applause.
Mate. So for those wondering what he's on about, it was very kind. The Brian Ford of the Buccaneers presented me with a game ball as part of the, you know, Tim and Gary and others have had them in the past. It's about just the support that we try and give the Bucs and the Bucs UK as a whole. As they say, like football, it's a team sport. So we'll leave it at that. Let's talk about the game, though. Tim, I'll start with you again, because I think you were probably the one that at least had some voice left by the end of the game. It was everything we'd hoped it to be, wasn't it?
It was 70,000 rabid NFL fans enjoying a magnificent occasion from the start. Not quite sure about the artist at the start and what they were up to, but apart from that, it was a superb day and it was great for most of us. You know, there's lots of people who came who've never seen the Bucks play before, and it was great to see those people enjoying the game, and getting that Bucks win was vital after the last minute win of the previous week. We can now go into the bye with a positive attitude.
Yeah, it feels like there's some momentum there. Gary, kind of, where was the game won, do you think? Because it felt like we got out to an early start and then a bit shaky.
Yeah, they always do that to us, though, don't they? They a bit of a wobble at the end. Where was it won? I think, like most games, it was won in the trenches. I watched it back yesterday and, you know, we established the run. I know we've tried to do it in the past and couldn't do it. And this time we had one or two runs that were negative or no gain, several that were only very short. But equally, we had quite a few that were, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 yards. And of course, Rashard White got, what, two or three sort of 20 yarders almost, seemingly. And I couldn't believe the gaps that he was able to run through. You know, that the O-line were presenting him with. I mean, heck, they were so wide, even Tim could have run through them.
He was almost 5 yards a carry, but you're right. 5 yards a carry when Fournette was on four. So, yeah, I think we might have found someone that maybe is that change of pace back, do you think? Adam, do you think we might see a bit of a double threat going forwards?
I like it. I like the fact that even if Lenny's injured, I know he's due back week 12, but even if he is injured, we've got full confidence in Rashard White. He can do the job for us. We've saw that. But one thing that stood out to me with the running game, how many third and ones did we have? It was, I can't remember a game where we've had so many third and ones, and it just made it, it calmed the nerves.
We converted 10 third downs, 10 of 15. Seattle had one of nine.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. You know, you win that third down battle, you're in a good position to win. And I know we had the roller coaster of emotions with our little wobble in the middle there, but just that you couldn't have scripted the game better as a neutral, you know, even with the Lenny pass on the Tom Brady.
I mean, the neutrals were probably not excited with a 14-0 up at halftime, but I think we were probably right with that team, weren't we?
We were well happy. Gary's already highlighted not one player, but I will pick five players who were absolutely outstanding on Sunday, and they've come in for a bit of stick over the last 3-4 weeks off me as well. But that offensive line were absolutely superb. There was not one hit on Tom Brady on Sunday. I think more hits he had was when he was running down the tunnel at the end. But they kept him clean all the way through. Nick Leverett looks as if he's been there all season and has come in and played really, really well. That line now looks as if they've got a bit of confidence, not just for Brady, but a bit of confidence in each other. And they played really, really well. But what I liked particularly was the balance of the game. Brady's been thrown 50, 60 times a game. What did he get? He didn't even throw 30 passes this week. And that's a really the balance good, really we need good as point. Well. I mean, but the run game sets up that as the passing game sets up the run.
Byron's definitely committed to the run game. Do you think, I mean, Tim, Adam, do you think that was the right sort of balance?
For that particular game, it was perfect. Our D managed to stop their run, and we could establish a run. We used the run far better than we have done all season, I would say. And the balance was perfect. Really, just, I don't know how to describe it other than I just felt comfortable with the amount of runs to passes. Do you know what I mean? It didn't make, I weren't getting frustrated with all the runs, and I wasn't thinking that he was just slinging it, Brady was just slinging it. It just felt right.
And I guess what you were saying about the scheming, Tim, that's why the Bucks had nearly 37 minutes time of possession, which that was the plan, wasn't it? Run the ball, keep it moving. If they haven't got it, they can't score.
Mm-hmm. Control the game, and you know we'll come out of the defense now in a moment. But we held Seattle to 5 punts in the first half. When you've got balance and you're running 380-yard touchdown drives, and they're punting 5 times in the first half. There is good balance on both sides of the ball then.
Yeah, and I think just before we go on to the defense, let's just talk about the receivers. So there were 8 Buccaneers that caught passes, but of course, 9 Buccaneers that were targeted with passes. one player didn't manage to quite hang on to it.
Interesting call at the wrong time. That's all I can describe it as. And you know, unfortunately, the big man fell over and then created a tripping penalty, which might be one of the first ever quarterback tripping penalties that I've ever heard of.
I mean, it's great we can laugh about it, but at the time I was like, that cost us the game.
Yeah, it wasn't great. And we all said all up in the stands, that's the wrong play at the wrong time. That could have killed the momentum we had going all the way through the game.
Gary, you must have at least been pleased there was a trick play.
Oh, I was overjoyed to see it. You know, I've been banging the drum for more creativity. You know, trick plays, call them what you want. The problem with that particular play was getting Lenny to roll to his right and then throw back to the left, which he's hard enough to do at the best of times. But I'm pretty convinced, having watched it again, that the reason they did it was because when they tried they did the direct snap to Lenny about 4 or 5 plays before, and Tom Brady standing out on the touchline, as we would
wide
call it,
open.
was absolutely, as Bruce Arians would say, wide ass open. And they just assumed it was going to be the case again. But because Lenny isn't a quarterback, he was just went into the mindset to throw it. So I didn't mind seeing it, to be honest. But you know, I'd much rather see a flea flicker because they always work.
But so that, I mean, go on.
Yeah, go on, Kieran.
I was just gonna say, you know, we had lots of receivers catching the ball. Who stood out?
you. Godwin into the mix a second.
Yeah, of course, absolutely.
I've been on this podcast quite a few times over the last few weeks, and I'm getting frustrated with Chris Godwin. His only play virtually this year has been the wide receiver screen. And it was good to see Chris Godwin actually getting 10, 12 yards downfield. He is as good as anybody catching the ball, especially over the middle. Mm. And we just got preoccupied with that. So it was good to see that change up.
And
Godwin.
Actually, a lot of the chunk plays came on over the middle passes, which were very unusual for us. So yeah, it feels like they really had, well, they were doing something different in Seattle, both with the run game and with the pass game. Gary, any of the receivers stand out for you?
Yeah, I do quite like the look of this new young lad, Julio Jones.
Sprightly.
I don't know much about him, but... Boy, he can run when he puts his mind to it. That touchdown, he really did turn the afterburners on. If he's fit, you know, he's going to be a godsend to us going down the stretch.
That's true.
Mike
was
a bit quiet, but then, you know, Mike got clattered last week, didn't he? In the very first play, I think it was against the Rams. So I'm not surprised he was a bit quiet, but he still got 50 odd yards.
Yeah, and one of those catches I think was about 30. So yeah, he had a nice chunk play that kept moving the chains.
He did.
Adam, what about the tight ends?
Oh well, Cade Ottonowski, he's becoming a confidence player with Brady. Isn't he? Brady's got all the confidence thrown into him, and as the connection is growing, you can see that he's becoming more and more confident thrown into him. So as every Bucks fan would think, I'm just happy that Brady's getting more and more comfortable with him. I just want to say, I don't want to turn this negative, but Scotty Miller, brilliant. But why does he jump every time he tries to catch the ball? It's because
he's only 4 foot tall.
And he feels the need to jump every time he catches. If he didn't jump, he would just catch the ball.
He tends to seem to let it hit his shirt rather than catch it actually with his hands first. Like I was shouting for it to get it off the ground. Little did I realise from 80 yards away that he had actually caught it cleanly.
Oh, it was a brilliant catch in the end, but he don't have to put the heartbeat into it, was he?
Brilliant.
He's actually better at the tougher catch than he is at the easier catches.
Yeah, so that the more time he's got to think about it, the greater likelihood it is of going wrong. Reminiscence of the great Stonehands Clayton himself, who only caught it when he sort of turned around and it was in his face. One of you mentioned the rushing game, so let's flip to the other side of the ball. That to me was the difference. The passing yards were broadly similar, although the passer rating wasn't. But we held the Seahawks to 39 yards rushing. I think, Adam, you said that was the key, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really good. You know, the Seahawks have been building on this Kenneth Walker. You only got to listen to one podcast or any YouTube video about the Seahawks, how they're playing, and they'll tell you that they're running the ball really well. The run game is setting up everything else, making it all easy. We shut that down. And, I don't know if I'm mentioning names right now, but Devin White. He had one of those games with all the right reasons to as well, with what happened on Thursday for him. Some players elevate and some players, they'll shy away. But that guy on that day, he elevated his play.
Yeah, and led the game in solo tackles, led the game team in combined tackles, led the team in sacks, led the team in tackles for a loss, led the team in quarterback hurries. Anything he didn't do, he forced a fumble. The only thing he didn't do is defend a pass, and that was just because Jamil Dean got that one.
Yeah, just what a game. What a game.
And he wasn't up on the scoreboard for MVP.
I know. I don't get the MVP thing with a fourth quarter to play.
But for you, Gary, go on, Tim.
Kieran Clegg Adams, I agree. Devin White, absolutely superb. Big fan. The front four helped create everything for Devin White to be able to move, run around the field. The two sacks came from the double teams of the two guys up the middle in Hicks and Veya.
Yeah.
And White had all the space in the world because that was control. Akeem Hicks, big guy. We've actually missed him over the last 6 weeks or so. You know, we all talked about Dominican Seal over the past couple of weeks. You know, Akeem Hicks putting that type of performance on Sunday.
I think you're right. I think it showed that we need that other big body in there that can move the pile a little bit.
If there's only one there, no disrespect out to Will Golson, who's been struggling this year, two men can control Vea, two to three men can. When you've got two big guys, then the challenge becomes much more difficult. The key part for Hicks is staying fit. Mm-hmm.
Gary, what was the highlight of defence for you?
The highlight on defence, I think overall the defence was fantastic, let's be honest. It really was. You're never going to hold a team over the course of 60 minutes to, you know, no points. So, you know, the little wobble where they allowed the two fourth downs in the fourth quarter, that was a little bit concerning. I think overall on defence, it was just an all-round performance, wasn't it? We stopped the rush. We tackled. Didn't see many missed tackles. Even someone I've criticised a lot personally, Joe Tryon Shoinka, showed up. Mm-hmm. He's got a bit of a problem when he runs straight at the tackle, because he can't get by a tackle if he's just, you know, the guy, he's rushed straight at
he's
him.
He's only got a ball rusher, right? There's no sort of dip and rip there.
Yeah, he needs to use his speed and he needs to develop some moves. But he can move, there's no question about it. I think the key was stopping Walker. They obviously had the game plan to stop Walker. Stop him and they had to come out in the second half flinging the ball. Which to a certain extent worked for them. But, you know, we had a big enough lead, fortunately. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give another guy a bit of credit here, and none of us ever mention him. Nacho.
Yeah.
He played absolutely fantastic. And not just his play. I was watching him on the sideline, like Pete and I were talking as the game was going on. He is the one that's rallying all the D up. He's getting Devin White up. He's like G'ing him on. And I thought he had an absolutely fantastic game. He was holding back two players at one point. We're trying to get a video of it to post it out. It's a brilliant play. But I think he's underrated. I think he's a key player in the locker room, you know, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Gelling the team together in the D, and they all rally around him. They must love him because you can see him all interacting and they're getting up with him and he's getting it. And when the offense on the field, he's the one G'ing all the D up. It's just, you need that type of character.
He does spend a lot of time on the field as well, playing.
Yeah.
So, you know, that shows what the coaches think of him. I think that's a really good point.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right, he is underrated. We don't give him enough credit. I completely agree with you. However, we are about to rename the team to the Tampa Bay Commanders.
Oh.
Because special teams is where the game, I think, was potentially won on Sunday.
Yeah.
Tell us about it. Position was amazing.
Yeah, give it. Tell us what you think, Ewan.
Well, I think so. Kamada only punted twice, but each time it was like a kickoff. There were a couple of drives where we really stumbled, and we were really, really deep, and it was like it was a kickoff instead of just being a punt. Because I think if the Seahawks get the ball at halfway instead of at the 20-25 yard line, I think they're looking at 3 points each time. And so I think that was you know, giving the defense a long field. I think made a massive difference. Suckup missed a field goal. I don't think anyone blames him for missing a 52-yarder.
No.
Do we know? No. We'll let that one slide, won't we?
No, I always said that at the game, he was on his limit. And I thought, yeah, it's cold. There was a slight breeze in the stadium as well. So the ball won't go as far. That was right on his limit in the best conditions. So, no, don't blame him at all.
And I know, Gary, you were looking at Darden the whole time, weren't you?
Well, I watched every play, of course, so of course my eyes were on him. I mean, I think he's improved a lot. I really do. And they had him on kickoff returns as well.
Yep. Because Rashad White was a bit more in it, yeah.
As opposed to Rashad White, presumably, because they knew White was going to start the game as a running back. I haven't got a problem with him. I think special teams overall, we were really good. Mentioning, I can never say the guy's name, the punter. Not only does he punt fantastically well, but he doesn't miss, you know, he's the holder as well, remember.
Yep.
You don't ever get a problem with holds. So a rookie to come in and take that job, his kickoffs, he had a couple of dodgy kickoffs. One was really short, one right in front of us on about the 10-yard line. Mm-hmm. Well, I wonder what the heck he was going on, you know, trying to do that. But he's well capable of blasting it, you know, into Rose Ed. So, you know, quite why they just don't do that, I don't know.
I almost see him as a weapon. It's, mm-hmm. Like I almost enjoy you watching him pin them back in the 20, and in the, you can feel the energy of the defense kicking on. I've never felt that about a punter before. I actually feel like he's a weapon. If he gets the punt, I don't care about it. I'm not like, oh damn, we're punting again. I'm excited to see where he pins them back. It's a brilliant feeling for special teams.
Yeah.
Considering we give special teams a hard time sometimes.
It's going to be great watching him in a dome.
I don't like this, Adam. We have never had a punter like it.
No, I know we haven't.
Remember when, how can you average
66-yard average or whatever it is? It's just, it's unheard of. He's brilliant.
But we made a general comment last week, I think it was. The one thing we tend not to worry about or discuss too much is the quality of special teams. Because always...
Punters and kickers.
They're always there. Or certainly have been issues. So that's a nice,
I gotta be honest,
one to...
The I know the turf has had a lot of stick, and I think,
or rather, it didn't.
Yeah, I know, not a lot of stick. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And I think Darden and White, they did well not to completely mess some of those plays up, because it didn't look. No, you only got to watch Tom Brady slipping. People were planting a foot, and he was like an ice skate. He was like a rink out there. But I got to be honest. I think you can't knock Darden or White in that game.
Yeah.
The thing about Darden is he does the one thing that you want the returner to do more than anything, and that's catch the ball and not fumble it.
100%. If he took fair catches every time, we'd be all right. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly. One very minor criticism I would have of him, he just seems to me to make the decision about fair catch really early. Mm. And there's several that he's catching that he could advance it 10 yards before anyone's on him. There's plenty where, you know, that he's got a guy in his face. But he just seems to me to make that decision very early. So, you know, that's obviously the way they're coached. As long as he catches it, I suppose at the end of the day, that's probably the best thing.
I think that's a fair summary. So we're not going to look ahead to Cleveland at this point, but we are going to think about our sort of magic wand type moment. And then after that, we'll do our competition. Adam, you can say about our competition wheel of names we've got. But in terms of, Tim, we'll start with you maybe, in terms of our magic wand moment. You know, we've got the bye week now, so there's a chance to really focus on something or hone in. What do you want to prioritise?
Well, I'll go back to Sunday and the groan when we took the first play and ran it straight up the backside of the guard. I groaned at that, but then we started to show more creativity throughout the game. And I want to see that creativity kept going. So maybe not running up the guard, up the gap every first down that we have. Try and change it up a bit. We see more chance. Play action in that game than we have done all season.
Yeah.
Let's keep that going. Keep this defense. You know, if we're going to run on first down every play, they could have 8 or 9 in the box.
And the problem on other games has been first and 10 becomes second and 9 with an incomplete pass, then becomes 3rd and 9. And you know, you're really limited, aren't you?
Yeah, you're behind the 8 ball. So let's try to be slightly more creative, although not Fournette the Brady type creative.
I know, there's levels to it. You know, just take it up a notch, not 7 notches straight away.
Okay, so Tim doesn't want the trick plays.
Fournette the Brady.
Gary, you're not allowed to use the trick play with magic wand, I'm afraid. Tim's forbade it. So what are you going to focus on instead?
Well, My magic wand doesn't actually involve the Bucks, as we're not playing this week. My magic wand is that we are currently, I believe, the fourth seed in the NFC.
Yeah, the lowest ranking division record, yes. Yeah.
So my magic wand is I just want those teams to keep losing. I know the Eagles...
It's not going to be a problem for the Rams, I suspect.
Sorry?
It's not going to be a problem for the Rams, I suspect.
No.
Bradford's having a mare. Cup's in hospital.
Yeah, he's on IR now. No, I just... If the Giants, Vikings and Eagles can just lose a few games, please give us a chance of, the number one seed at least. Yeah. I know it's unlikely at this stage, but...
Well, I mean, it does feel like... Well, we'll come on to talk about the several seasons, but it does feel like there's no runaway sort of, undefeated team or anything this year. It's much, much, much closer, especially in the NFC. Mm-hmm. Okay, Adam, magic wand from you.
Yeah, I don't know how you guys feel about this, but I think they'd be an awful secretive about Ryan Jensen. We haven't had no updates or anything, right? So my magic wand is going to be get Ryan Jensen back in, get him training, and the quicker he comes back, the better. Because I think if he comes back, that's a game changer for the rest of the season. If we can stack another two wins and then he comes back, that's an absolute game changer for our running game, for Brady. So my magic wand is going to be sprinkle a bit of that dust on his leg, get him back playing, and get him in the lineup.
Good call. Well, those of us that have done tours of One Buck Place have seen the hydrotherapy pools and all sorts of things they've got there. So the facilities are second to none. So I'm sure maybe they have to sort of have a fishing rod with a beer, I don't know, hanging at the end to try and get him in the pool.
Barbecue. He loves the barbecue, doesn't he, Jensen? I don't know. It's a strange one because we see him walking around. There's no brace on it. We see him interacting with fans. And there's no update. They're not saying anything about him. So it just makes me wonder, is he going to come back early?
In fairness, Adam, they've never said anything right from day one.
Yeah, from the start. You're right.
When he first did it, it was, we can't scan him because we need the swelling to go down. Mm. Then they put him on IR so they don't need to say anything. And I actually said on the podcast before the season, I reckon he'll be back after the bye. Because they're playing games with us. It's exactly what you've just said. They are playing games. They're keeping everybody in the dark. And next week or whenever, the week after, he'll start practicing. And he'll do what Vita Vea did in the playoffs a couple of years ago and just suddenly appear. And all in the garden will be rosy again.
That's right. What about you, Kieran?
My magic wand is near identical to Tim's. I think I was bemoaning the running game at the beginning of the game, and David turned around and went, "Look, you doofus." I'm paraphrasing clearly. "Look, you doofus. This is about setting up the pass. This is how we're going to win this game." And he was 110% right. So I think not so much about the play calling, but I just think the dynamics of the line. Now the line starts to solidify a little bit more like trap plays, pulling guards, something that tries to create the mismatch at the point of attack. Because I feel like the reason we're getting the 1 yards and the no yards is because it's head up and it's just, an immovable force, an unstoppable object coming together, and it's just cancelling each other out. What I noticed more and more against Seattle was we were having two in the backfield, and having that lead blocker, I think, was a big part of having those extra yards. No, I'm not taking anything away from the running backs themselves, Fournette or Rashad White. I think they both did fine. But I think if we can do anything to create a mismatch at the point of attack, that I think will give us, it makes it just a little bit easier. But you can only do that when you've got confidence in your line and your lineman, and you're not going to have a linebacker plunging through wherever the guard's pulling from, and you get tackled for a 5-yard loss. So that would be my one.
Quick question to you all. How do you think the coaching went? Are you happy? I know Bowles is never going to bowl you over with his enthusiasm as it comes out, but how do you think they called the game? Were you happy with Leftwich?
It's difficult to know from the sidelines, isn't it, how much of that was Leftwich's change of game plan, or was it reacting on the hoof? We look better. So if that's down to coaching or better play on the field and more consistent play on the field, I'm happy either way. Mm. Just need Leftwich to change things, as I said, be slightly more creative to give us more opportunities that are undoubtedly there.
It could just be, though, that they're getting more comfortable with each other. You've got a lot of, you know, young players in there. Cade Otton has been fantastic. White was fantastic. You know, they're getting to know the game. They get the speed. They keep saying that the game slows down for them. So, you know, with those really good... And Rashard White, you know, how heads up was that of him to go down?
Last play,
on what
yeah.
was effectively the last play of the game. I know it wasn't, but effectively it was. You know, so Seattle had to take their final time out. That's when you know you've won the game, when you get mature people doing things like that. So it could just be that they're, you know, we're getting into the season, they, you know, they're playing well, they're getting a bit of momentum, they're getting a bit of confidence with each other, you know.
Yeah
my two penny one.
I think the only thing obviously anytime you win you're going to say the coaching is better than when you lose. The only complaint I would have is in the third quarter when Seattle started to get a bit of momentum, I did notice we were playing what I assumed was either a lot of deep cover one or cover three, where the cornerbacks were a good 10 to 12 yards off the receivers.
Yeah.
And that felt to me like sort of, it wasn't, I mean, it's Todd Bowles, it's Ben, but Ben don't break. And do you know what? It worked because they got down to the end zone and they had to kick field goals. But it just felt, as a fan, it feels a bit antsy because you see the other team moving the ball. You're like, I don't want them to move the ball.
Yeah. Stop giving them 9 yards. Yeah. Press.
But there were turnovers, which we haven't seen turnovers for the, you know, the Bucks getting some turnovers in a long, long while. So, yeah, we're all happy, I think. But again, as ever, tell us what you think. Our thanks, as usual, to Bucks Report. Make sure you also give Bucks Germany a follow on Twitter as well. Make sure you're subscribed to us if you're not already. Adam, we have our wheel of names for a competition. If someone doesn't know about our competitions and wheel of names, do you want to just say a little bit?
Yeah, I'll say a little bit. Well, every week we have a competition. It can be rant, it can be offense, defense. This week was a strange run. Our very own Garrier, the smiling speedster, he ran the 5K race in Germany. But Graham Reed, what a legend. Let's just say that straight away. He ran the 5K race. And this question was about how fast would he do it in. And long story short, it boiled down to two people who were only 3 seconds out either side of the actual time he ran. So we're about to do the wheel of names, I guess.
We are. I should say, obviously, these competitions we have every week are for our members, and they are prize competitions every week.
Brilliant prizes.
So let me just go into full screen mode on my other screen and screen.
I think people would be surprised when they see one name. There might be some collusion going on.
Ha ha ha! Yeah, one of the panel here might be a potential winner.
I doubt
so,
it.
I'm
it was
hoping...
amazing how he was with him at the time.
So, Gary, there's rumours of a doping scandal. were you buying Steins for Graham the night before?
No, I wasn't with him, Tim. I was about 3 minutes behind him.
Well done.
We shall see. Okay, so we've got Sonny Blackmore against Gary Bottley. This is Gary stealing sweets from children, isn't it? Every week.
Oh, yeah, bad man.
Honestly, I'm with you all the way, Sonny.
Come on, Sonny. He's on a loser anyway, Kieran.
So I mean, I'll be honest. We've picked some music. I'm afraid it's not John Denver. Copyright prevails, but we'll see. Ho ho ho! For the 16th time of spinning, let's see if we can finally get Sonny to come up. Gary, we have a winner, fair and square.
Well done, mate.
They're all going to think it's fixed, but at least I did get out of bed on Saturday morning and go and do it.
I think that is your just reward, to be honest. Yeah. It was a great thing, wasn't it? You had a few supporters come along. Every time you go somewhere, you do the park run. A heroic effort after the day after the night before.
And I have to say, a beautiful park, West Park in Munich. If you ever go to Munich, go and have a walk around West Park. It's fantastic.
Brilliant.
Oh, well done. Seriously, great effort. To have a few times, and then the next day do a 5K. For whoever
and not only race. Not only a 5K, my fastest ever.
Oh, 5K. PB.
I heard it was just a trainer round of applause.
Yeah, it's the go faster shoes.
No, well done.
Okay, so we'll just end up with a quick season stock take then. So those of you that went back and watched episode whatever it was, we'll know that we do a Bucks UK members survey to see how we think the games are going to go. Now, the Bucks UK members in aggregate thought that we would be 7-3 at this point. So actually at 5-5 and given a couple of games that we've left on the table, feels like we're in the similar sort of ballpark. I think it's fair to say two wins on the trot probably makes this look a lot rosier than we were worried it was going to be. We've now got the bye week. Then we're looking at the Browns, the Saints, the 49ers, the Bengals, the Cardinals, and hopefully a good finish with the Panthers and the Falcons. Maybe, Gary, if I come to you first. First of all, right, I mean, 5-5, is that we're still in contention, aren't we?
Absolutely in contention. We're top of the NFC South. It just feels a little bit, I can't think what the right word is, but, you know, we should have beaten the Panthers, we should have beaten the Steelers, and we'd be sitting there at 7-3, which is what we all said it was going to be. The key thing for me now is we have to start building some momentum, just like we did in 2020 after the bye week when, you know, we just went on a run and kept winning. We need to do that. If we do that, then we'll be sitting pretty at the end of the season.
Do you agree, Tim?
I do. I give myself give the team the ranking of a C minus for the season to date. At the start of the year, it promised so much. Two good wins to start with, and then a couple of horrible defeats. But that last minute drive against the Rams, the momentum we've built up against the Seahawks, in a way, I'm slightly disappointed the bye has come this week. I would like one more week to keep that momentum and really build it. But it is what it is. Yeah, if we look back at 2020 and that finish we had in the regular season in 2020, we could all hope for that again.
Adam, so do you think, are they right? Is the NFC South in the bag?
I wouldn't say it's in the bag yet. But, you know, like I say, take 2 weeks ago, we were one of the worst teams in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, it just takes those tiny little moments, little game changers, momentum shifters, and... You know, let's be honest, if we come off a bye, get a win, Ryan Jensen comes back, start building confidence, all of a sudden we've gone from one of the worst teams playing terribly, scoring a field goal in the game to, you know, real contenders getting into the playoffs. And I'm in a deep run, especially if we get our, you know, some of the injured players back. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, if you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, devastated, absolutely devastated with how this year's panned out. 2 weeks on, and we've had some real good momentum changes. I'm feeling way, way better about the season overnight. You know, just
it's funny, isn't it? 17 games. 17 games doesn't feel like a lot, but a lot can change.
Well, a lot can change in 2 weeks.
Which of the upcoming opponents do you think you're most worried about?
I take the Bengals and the 49ers. If you when you read them out there, you take the Bengals and 49ers as the tougher games of the seven that are left. So, you know, if you looked at it again on paper, ignore what we did against Pittsburgh and Carolina, you can see 11, maybe 12 wins coming out of it.
For me,
well, that would be good.
Which will win the division and probably get you a third seed, maybe.
Well, that'd be great. But the next game, the Browns game, is the one for me, because I think that's going to be the benchmark coming off the bye. Are we going to kick on, or is it going to be, you know, is it going to not quite be the miracle ending that we all like. So I think the next game is super, super important.
Bear in mind, though, that the Browns are in free fall. You know, they lost last week. Well, they're playing the Bills this week. So they're going to be a very popular selection in the Eliminator pick a team to lose competition.
Well, that's what I mean.
So, you know, they're just waiting on Deshaun Watson to finally take the field. Unfortunately, it won't be against us.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. If we, you know, if we don't perform against the Browns, and, you know, dare I say we lose, where does the season go from there? But if we comfortably beat the Browns and we're kicking on, confidence builder again, it could do a, you know, a whole new trajectory of the season. So I think next week's a pretty important week.
And then the Saints the week after, I always worry the Saints are a trap game. Oh. Who knows who's going to be their quarterback at that point? It could be Dawn, it could be Jameis.
They don't even know.
No. It's tricky. So 5-5, that, my maths hopefully in my head means so there's a maximum of 12-5, or unfortunately a minimum of 5-12. Where do you think we might end up somewhere in that range, Gary?
I think Tim's summed up the two difficult games, but we're at home to the Bengals.
Correct.
We go to San
away to
Fran,
the 49ers, away to the Browns, away to the Cardinals.
Yeah, the Cardinals again are in 3-4. If I think we can go on a bit of a run now, I really do. The Bengals game for me, even though it's at Raymond James, the Bengals game is going to be the toughest one. Covering their receivers is going to be really hard. I think we can win probably 6 of the 7.
So we could be 11-6 then. That would be a healthy record. Tim,
yeah,
you're going to take the over or the under on that?
10.5. I'm going slightly under it because I think that Bengals game could be a toss-up. A lot of it depends will they have Chase back by then and how fit will he be. Mixon has been very up and down this season. Joe Burrow spend a lot of time running around because his offensive line can't block. You don't know. They've got their issues as well. The Browns have got severe issues. It's like they've lost that team already. You already highlighted the Saints, the Panthers, the Falcons. Again, on paper, it shouldn't cause us a problem, but we don't win the game on the paper.
Okay, so we've got 10 to 11.
10 to 11.
Well, you know what I'm going to say. We're going 12.
Yeah.
It's obvious. It's just like I'm not having this negativity.
12-5.
Going 12-5. We're not
clean
losing
sweep.
Any more games.
What I think is interesting is we used to say a race to 10. 10 was what you wanted to get you into the playoffs. So hopefully 10, 10.5 or 12 gets us into the playoffs. But we've mentioned earlier, the NFC South seems to be that tragic sort of division this year. So it's not so much about wanting it, but getting the seeding. I think you were saying to Gary, weren't you, about the seeding. Do you think there's a chance we can get a home game if we get to the playoffs?
Well, if we win the division, we get a home game anyway, as I understand it. But, you know, the better the record, the more chance of the subsequent games, you know, being at Raymond James as well. So you've got to shoot for the highest possible seed you can get, which is why my magic wand is for the three teams above us to start losing a few.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay, guys, thank you ever so much. Thank you guys ever so much for watching as well. If you were there in Munich and you've got a memory you want to share, stick it down in the comments, assuming it's printable. If it was anything to do with Adam and a leprechaun, it's entirely false. Oh, he's there still.
I still got him. He carried me all the way home.
I'm certain of one loss in the bye week. I've got Dom in the fantasy football this year. I think he scored about 500 points last week, so it's not looking good for me.
Against me.
Yeah. So thanks, guys, and thanks to you guys at home. And go Bucks!
Go Bucks!
Go Bucks! Go Bucks.